February 7th. And we're in for a treat today because instead of having the executives from the Office of Higher Ed or MinSCU or the University of Minnesota, which we appreciate and respect, but really, of course, what they're there when they talk to us for is for our students. And so today we get to hear from our students themselves. So it's a special day, and I sure enjoyed speaking with those of you at the rally. There was quite a – how many of you who are in the audience here were also at the rally? Wonderful. So great participation. Okay. So you will notice on today's agenda that there's a QR code. So this QR code can be scanned by your smartphone and will take you to some of the documents that will be distributed in today's committee as well as today's agenda. So this is something new we're trying. Ultimately, it'd be great if we could be a paperless committee. So we'll begin with seeing if this works. Thank you to Dave, our committee administrator, for making that happen. And, oh, Brad as well. Brad Shapiro, thank you. Okay, so first we're going to hear from the Minnesota State College Student Association. So I would call the three who are speaking come at this time, Steve Sabin, Jenna Lubinsky, and Brian Pierce.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing the time for students to address you today.
And please do start with your name
for
the record.
My name is Steve Sabin. I'm president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, or MSCSA. Our organization is a student-led organization of the over 100,000 student public college students in Minnesota. And our mission as an association is to ensure quality, accessible, and affordable higher education for all the public college students through advocacy and leadership development. Before you hear from the fellow students to my left this afternoon, I'd just like to provide some context about our students that attend our public two-year colleges. Our students attend the colleges in every corner of Minnesota, enrolling in higher education with a dream to better their lives and add to vital workforce needs of Minnesota. After graduation, 80% of these students stay in Minnesota to fill vital workforce needs. Also, of these students who graduate with an undergraduate degree in Minnesota, over 60% of those come from a MinSCU college. But I ask you, who are these students? When you think college student, what comes to mind? A studious young adult enrolling in 15 credits of a college right after high school graduation? Or an ambitious teenager moving a tiny refrigerator and an Xbox from their parents' SUV in the dormitory? This is not the reality of our students. Over 56% of our students attend classes part-time. That's right. The majority of our students are part-time. Oftentimes, they are working and have families to support. They are struggling to afford college and even keep a roof over their head. Many of our students are also returning to college years after they graduate just to get retraining and get a second chance on life. In fact, the average age of a MinSCU student is 26. Our students are the first in their families to go to college. They are low income, and they are often students of color. Unfortunately, these students are also struggling with debt. Our two-year community and technical college students pay the third highest tuition in the state, or in the country. Even after accounting for federal aid and student grant aid, over half of Minnesota's colleges pay the highest net cost in the country. In addition to my role with MSCSA, I am also a student at Central Lakes College and the first in my family to attend college. I was raised by my grandparents and decided to enroll in college after caring for my ailing grandfather. He was diagnosed with bone cancer, and in caring for him, I came to know many compassionate and knowledgeable nurses who helped him. I completed a diploma in practical nursing and am now working on my associate in arts degree. When I graduate, I hope to pursue a bachelor's in nursing, become an RN, and serve as a critical care nurse and patient advocate. However, my family also struggled to afford education. Just like the majority of Minsky College students, I had to work through college, sometimes requiring part-time attendance. I tried in every way possible to limit the amount of debt I took on. My wife was also attending nursing classes at CLC at the same time. While both of our programs required a set amount of credits each semester, we adjusted our schedules in order to free up enough time for work and for our studies, while also maximizing the amount of state grant funding that we'd receive. With limits on our work schedule, we relied on grant funding to afford college. Despite this aid, I still incurred almost $20,000 in debt, and my wife totaled to this day have over $50,000 in debt. My wife and I are now entering our 30s and look forward to having kids and buying our first house. However, we are faced with the very real possibility that these milestones will need to be delayed because of this massive debt. Today, I'm fortunate to have two students with me, Jenna and Brian, who can further illustrate who our students are and why investing in our two-year colleges is so important. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Jenna.
And Steve, if you would first just address a couple questions
sure,
that I have.
Sure.
So would you be willing to share, and you don't have to name the institution if you don't, but do you have your student debt through a community bank, through, is it a federal loan? Could just share a little with us about that. We're trying to really understand what our young people are grappling with so we can figure out how we can help.
Sure. Madam Chair, my entire student loan debt and as far as my wife is all through the federal student loan program.
Okay, very good.
And some before it went to the federal program.
And were you able to take advantage of the lower interest rates, or is your debt at the earlier higher interest rates?
Madam Chair, most of it's at the rate it at now. I believe some of our earlier debt was at some of the higher interest.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And mm-hmm. I'm sorry that you and your wife have had to take on that kind of debt.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for doing what you're doing.
Certainly.
Okay. Yes. We'd love to hear from you, Jenna.
Madam Chair, my name is Jenna Lubinsky. Thank you for letting me speak with you this afternoon. I am a student at Minnesota State College Southeast Technical in Winona. And I am studying retail sales and management and will be graduating with a double degree in a year from now. I'm an overachiever and a workaholic, and I'm also a single parent. My focus is to better myself for my children. I find myself at a young age, remember thinking to myself, what am I going to do? And it was then that I realized I had to pave a new road for myself, to support my two daughters, Lillian, who is 6, and Kenley, who is 4. When I decided to go back to school, I knew I needed to be a role model for my children and make a better life for them and myself. My dream was to own my own business where I was born and raised. I did this because I have to be the main provider in my family. As of February 1st, I was able to make that dream come true, and I now own my own business in Winona, Minnesota. I work full-time. I have 4 jobs while attending school full-time. Time management is probably my most difficult to fit my schoolwork, full-time work, be a parent. Nearly every minute of every day of my life is planned. I wake up at 6 a.m., scramble to get my kids ready, and I get my oldest daughter, Lily, on the bus by 7:15. And then I take my other daughter, Kenley, to preschool, and then it's off to school myself. I then go to school until at least noon, and some days later if I have other studies, and then from there I go to my job at the local Harley dealer until 6 o'clock at night. After I get home, it's dinner, homework with my daughter, and then it's bath time and bedtime, you know, always accompanied with a bedtime story, and then to get to hear about their day. And then sometimes I'm fortunate where I get enough time to myself and then hopefully get to finish my homework before 1 a.m. The weekends are just as busy with working at the Harley-Davidson shop. I also bartend and setting up my new store, which is, trying to do decorative home goods on people who are a budget. It's Pinterest in real life. I juggle my weekend duties while trying to make time for my children. In addition to all this, I still find time to serve as the Southeast Technical Student Senate President on the Winona campus. I also work as the Southeast Representative Platform Committee for Minnesota State College Student Association, and I also work in the LRC on the Winona campus as a work study. In the end, I see all this time spent as well worth the sacrifice I am making now to contribute to my community, hometown, and family. Although in the end of my college career, I have accrued about $75,000 in student debt, my student debt adds additional stress, but I know my decision will be well worth it while I'm building a future for my daughters and myself.
Well, quite an inspiring story. Thank you very much. You've certainly tackled a lot, and you obviously have a lot of energy with which to do that. So a couple questions about your debt.
Absolutely.
Can you share a similar question? Who is carrying your debt and interest rates?
Madam Chair, my debt is from the federal aid that I receive, and I always have to take out my max amount of loans so I can keep that roof over my head and make sure that I have a dependable vehicle so I can get into town, make sure that everything is taken care of for the following months to come, in between, now that we're not getting our summer loans and stuff like that.
So have you ever tried to access the state grant program?
State grant, I also get that.
Well,
and
you
that would be barely enough to cover my college books, let alone my student debt that I would have there. So, but yes, I do get that, and I couldn't be more thankful.
Well, we're going to look at that formula so that it would be our intention to consider expanding the amount, particularly people with dependents would be eligible for, and part-time students. So thanks very much.
Any other questions, Madam Chair,
from the committee before we move on? Okay, great.
Thank you.
And Brian. So I'd like to introduce Brian.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Brian Pierce. I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Currently, I'm going for 2 degrees. One is business AA in business management, and the other is in professional sales. I attend Hennepin Tech College. My wife also is a student at Hennepin Tech. She's going towards her degree in early childhood education. We have 4 children, 3 with disabilities. Brianna's 15, and she has mirror dyslexia. Darius is 12 with autism. Nadia is 9 with EA, which stands for esophageal atresia. That means she has no connection from her throat to their stomach.
Oh, my.
And Taven, who is a rambunctious 5-year-old. I was born and raised in New York. After graduating from high school, I enrolled in the community college, then transferred to the city college. I had to drop out of school to support my first child. I worked to support my family with 2 jobs. I worked as a maintenance porter and as a ward clerk in a hospital. I kept working these positions until my second daughter was born, Nadia. In 2007, our son Alex passed away from SIDS after being 6 weeks old. 3 weeks later, we moved to Minnesota to seek medical care for Nadia and her esophageal atresia. She has the rarest form of this condition, and only doctor to treat it was in Minnesota at Fairview Children's Hospital. Nadia's had 59 major surgeries, countless minor surgeries. She even dying on the operating table once before resuscitated. After 11 years hiatus from higher education, I knew going back to school was the only way to break the cycle of poverty and low-wages jobs of having children with expensive medical bills. Without college education, a real employment was bleak. My wife and I love children, and we wanted to open up a daycare. The daycare will allow us to stay home with our children and also care for others' children, and so to manage our children's needs. And we have to learn to manage our schedules. So I sort of chose to to go attend Hennepin Tech because it has hands-on learning components. It has both the programs we're looking for, and the courses were flexible to our schedule. We needed that because our daughter was in the hospital for many long stays, months, one time a year at a time. I've strived in school. I've made the president's list. I also participate in activities. I take on leadership roles like Student Senate, Student Life Board. I'm one of the creators of the Entrepreneur Club, Trio Club, and one of the founders of the Child Development Club. But finances have been a struggle for us. Currently, I work full-time, and I also do student work-study. Having two parents who are students is financially challenging. I'm in school full-time to get the maximum aid award that I'm available for. Even with the aid, I still have to take out debt. Being in school takes away from our ability to be with our children. Being a new family, we have skilled workers who come to our home to help our children with their skills, with their disabilities and things like that. Time for studies is also a challenge. In a couple of years, my oldest will be attending school, so the expenses of colleges, not just our education, her education, also scares me. But this year has been pretty good. Nadia's doing better. She's been out of hospital for one full year, and Brianna's considered to attend Hennepin Tech with us, so that's good. And upon graduation in May, we'll hope to have our children at our graduation, and hopefully in September we'll be opening up our daycare. Thank you for listening to my family story.
Well, thank you for sharing your family story, and you've had some heartache, but it sounds like you are doing well and that your daughter is healthy.
Yes.
So that's a wonderful thing. And so with regard to your debt, have you had to take out loans for the current schooling that you're in too then?
Madam Chair, yes, I've taken out loans. Currently, my wife isn't on financial aid, so she has to take out loans for hers. I have to take out loans to sometimes cover for her and things like that. Before we first started, we didn't have to really go to outside. We was basically strictly financial aid, but now we've had to take out loans in and at the federal level. But luckily, it's at the reduced rate that it is now.
Yeah. Well, thank you to the three of you for
Madam
sharing
Chair.
Your... Yes, go ahead.
Before you let them leave, I just want to... I had the opportunity to meet Brian and his wife, and she's over here, so she should wave. So
I'll say hello.
Because you didn't make her wave.
No.
But I had the opportunity to meet these two on one of my tours, and I just want to tell you they are one of the most awesome dynamic couples I have met ever. And so we are very proud to have you as Minsky students, and hopefully graduation will be done, and hopefully you'll get your dream of the daycare center, and I know that you will make awesome, awesome daycare owners. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Senator.
You guys are always so much fun, so thanks.
Great.
Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much.
I'm sure thank you for the time to speak to you guys today.
Yeah, so next we have the folks from the Minnesota State University Student Association, Mariah Miles, Alexandra Griffin, and Tom Schramm.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing us to present to you today. My name is Mariah Miles, and I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. I am a senior at Minnesota State University Mankato, majoring in international relations. We're excited to work with you throughout this session to address the challenges we're facing as students and to prepare Minnesota for a more prosperous future. I'd like to begin with telling you a little bit about what our great organization is and what we do. The Minnesota State University Student Association represents the seven universities under MinSCU: Southwest State, Mankato, Winona, Metropolitan State, St. Cloud State, Moorhead State, and Bemidji State University, which totals around 75,000 students that we currently serve. We're a nonprofit run by students and funded by students. Our board of directors is comprised of the elected student body presidents from each campus. The three officers that we have are elected by our peers, and I serve as the chair for our board of directors, and I currently have a director from Winona State sitting right next to me. We advocate on behalf of the students at a local, state, and federal level. We hold three large conferences each year that allow for networking and leadership development and exchanging of ideas between our students. In addition to that, we have an organization that allows us to have campus committees at each level, where we have four talented students take on a variety of roles. We train them to lobby with us throughout the session, so soon our committee members will be meeting with all of your committee members, and we look forward to having our students in your offices. Through this, they gain valuable leadership experience and advocacy skills. MSUSA also houses two scholarship programs, the Penny Program, which assists students pursuing internships in public or community service, and the Jared P. Steen Student Leadership Position is awarded to students displaying leadership and passion for student advocacy. This year, our legislative agenda does support the Minsky budget request. There are many initiatives included in this that we are excited. Specifically, we're excited about the internships that will create 10,000 internships by 2015 through matching of state and private monies. And so, to touch on a more personal side, I'm lucky enough to have an internship that I gained through networking at Mankato. I work for Taylor Corporation, and I've been lucky enough to be offered a job with them next year. Without building that relationship, I don't think I would have been able to secure a job for next year. And it's so important that with each new internship created, it greatly enhances the opportunities afforded to students through local business partnerships and reaching out within our communities to partner with our universities. Also, through the past couple years, I have been involved with Greater Mankato Growth and Southern Minnesota Initiatives for Workforce Development. We discuss the skills gap, how we find the talent, and how we keep the talent. And to be perfectly honest, I've been in these conversations for about 3 years, and they're the same thing each and every time, no matter who it's with. We know that we want relationships between our universities and our businesses. We know that there are talent within our universities that the businesses can reach, and it's just saying, how do we do this? Where do we go? How do we start? So frankly, I'm frustrated, and I was very excited to see the initiative within the Minsky budget proposal this year to create the 10,000 internships. And I said, finally, and I already have faculty breathing down my neck about this because now that I'm state chair, more people know me, and they stop me in the halls, even though I don't know them, and they say, when is this going to happen? How are you making this happen? And that's something we're excited to get to work on. A large component of those conversations includes how our student demographic is changing. There isn't the normal, average, traditional student anymore. And part of addressing the future needs of our workforce is identifying the debt that they graduate with. The average student debt for a university student or college state student at under Minsky institution is $28,566. This dramatic increase has been caused by disinvestment in higher education. In 1983, the state passed a law which created a guideline that the legislature should fund 67% of the total cost of tuition for students at a state or college universities. The state stuck to that guideline until about 2003. And then over the last 10 years, it's continued to decrease. Now, students are bearing the brunt as the state only covers little more than one-third of the total cost of tuition. This has placed the cost of higher education directly onto the students, and Minsky is now operating with a state appropriation that is close to about the same appropriation in real dollars as it was in 2001. The way this translates into my life, just so you know, I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I have three little brothers, Keegan O'Shea, Kaylin Thomas, and Sean Patrick. And my parents are from small towns in northern South Dakota, and they graduated with a large amount of debt. My parents have worked for the Catholic Church their entire lives, and my dad last year took a risk for a job that paid more, and now he's unemployed. And so as I graduate, they've hounded me, figure out how much your loan payments are going to be before you graduate. Figure them out. And last week, I figured them out. I will owe over $700 a month to my student loan debt. And currently, I'm in negotiating my salary for Taylor Corporation, and I have no idea where to start. I had no idea I would have $700 a month, so I'm graduating with around $40,000. But it's because of this initiatives, and I know we're developing the talent that I feel reassured about my future, but I can't say I feel the same way about my peers. I'd just like to speak to the students that are going to be in front of you today. These are the high-caliber students. I can already tell that they're some of the most talented students in the state, some of the most hardworking students in the state. And so we're the lucky ones, even though we have all of this coming along with us. And so just to finish up, hardworking student, $40,000. It's state money, private money, and a wee bit of federal. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Alexander Griffin.
Well, thank you very much. And you know what? I have faith in your ability, in your future, too, because you are obviously one impressive young woman. And, you know, we are equally troubled by your situation and by a $700 monthly payment. So thank you.
Great.
Alexandra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alexandra Griffin, and I'm the president of the Winona State University Student Association and a board member for MSUSA. In the spirit of disclosure, I should also mention that Senator Miller is my landlord and probably already knows all too well about my financial woes due to student loan debt. On that note, Senator Miller, thank you for being so understanding about my late rent checks.
Butter what?
Late rent checks. So I am graduating from Winona State University in May with a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science and a Bachelor of Science in Public Administration and $50,000 in debt.
Mm. Senator Miller, you hear that? Compassionate Senator Miller.
Right. At Winona State, I was instantly immersed in a community of learners that helped me uncover my passions for government, for community, and politics. From day one, I was involved in WSU's Student Senate and our statewide organization. I served on campus committees, volunteered in local political campaigns, and took a full classload of political science classes from the excellent faculty at Winona State. When I graduated from high school, though, a lot of people told me that there was no way I could afford to go to college. Nobody had put aside money for me, my mom had just lost her job, and my family was just not in a financial position to help me through college. But also at that time, I knew that I had the talent and the determination to succeed at Winona State. So I borrowed every dime that it cost me to attend school. I received the Pell Grant, maxed out my federal loans, and even took a private self-loan to pay my tuition bills. However, I think more importantly, over the last 4 years, I completed 2 bachelor's degrees, a semester-long study abroad program, and a congressional internship in Washington, D.C. I won the Tim Penny Federal Service Fellowship, got elected student body president, and am graduating with honors. For those achievements, I wholeheartedly believe that my investment was worth incurring what will certainly be a crippling amount of student loan debt. I took every opportunity given to me at Winona State to get the most out of my state-sponsored education. I was persistent and determined to graduate on time while excelling in my coursework. But due to the staggering cost of tuition, unfortunately, it doesn't matter how well I did, it doesn't matter how hard I worked, or how much I contributed to my communities, I will still carry with me an excessive burden of debt. As I graduate in May, I have no time to celebrate or feel accomplished. I have circled on my calendar the dates that my payments for student loans are coming due. If I ever thought I'd felt pressure in my life before, it is certainly nothing in comparison to the fear of defaulting on my student loans, as so many students do. I'm desperately searching for jobs in the Twin Cities area while looking for apartments that I can afford on a minimal budget. I have a very real sense that my $50,000 in student loan debt puts me at a disadvantage in the next stages of my life. I will certainly be postponing other investments that I had imagined for myself after college. It looks like I'll be driving my 1994 Mazda Protege for as long as it lasts, because I certainly am not going to be buying a new car anytime soon, let alone going to graduate school, buying a home, or starting a family. As a 20-year-old college graduate, that's not really what I imagined for my life. However, thankfully, I have 2 degrees from a fine Minsky institution. I have talents I know are valuable to the state of Minnesota. I have a desire to succeed that is unwavering. And I have the skills to come here today and be the face of 70,000 Minsky students who are in situations not unlike mine. and hopefully aid in the process of helping Minnesota remain a great place to live and learn. Thank you for your time.
Congratulations on your accomplishments. Wow. I think you're right. The students we're going to hear from today are obviously, you know, that you're here are certainly our finest students. So thank you for sharing your story.
Great. And I'd like to introduce Thomas Schramm, my classmate.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Thomas Schramm, and I'm a student at Winona State University. I'm also the legislative intern at MSUSA currently and involved in student government at Winona State. She's basically my boss. I'm a first-generation college student, and going to college I knew would be something that would be very expensive. I'm fortunate enough my parents were able to save some money for me and put that aside. But either way, even that amount of money is not enough to cover the cost of college. In pursuit of that goal, I'm going to be graduating in 3 years. I've taken summer courses, done everything possible, had a full load, along with extracurriculars, and it's been hard. But I've been able to save myself a year, and I'm going to graduate with only $16,000 in student loan debt, and those are all federal loans. It's definitely been helpful for me, but I can tell that the course I've taken is something that was difficult, and I had to make some sacrifices for it. I can speak to the fact, though, that tuition is terrible, and it, not terrible, I'm sorry, but tuition is something that is very expensive. High tuition's terrible. It's difficult, but...
Let's be honest, it's terrible. Yeah,
first being frank. But one of the other issues is the other costs associated with going to college. And in that interest, I'd like to talk about the cost of textbooks. One of the major issues I've faced during my time at Winona State has been the dramatically increasing cost of textbooks. In 2012, our association conducted a survey of all of our campuses, and the findings were pretty dramatic. Almost 1,500 students responded to the survey, and hundreds left comments about their own personal experiences. And one of the most important things to take away from this survey is that textbooks and the cost of them represent an issue affecting students across the state, regardless of system. 94% of the student respondents indicated that the cost of textbooks and course materials impacted their ability to afford college, with nearly one-third stating that textbooks costs greatly impacted their ability to fund their own education. More than half of those responding said that they have chosen not to purchase a textbook that was required for a course directly as a result of the cost, just looking to save that money. It's important to our students that we act to address this issue, and we have worked hard with many stakeholders, including the University of Minnesota Student Associations, to try to come up with a plan that will get Minnesota in front of the quickly changing textbook marketplace and help alleviate some of the burden that is currently being shouldered by students. We've been working on a model that will allow faculty to create a plan for training on open education resources with the goal of ensuring that all faculty become knowledgeable on how to use, access, customize, and adopt these free resources. And if such a plan is implemented, there's the potential to both save students money and enhance the classroom experience through the use of customizable materials. Open education resources are freely accessible, openly formatted, and openly licensed documents and media use for teaching, learning, education, assessment, and research purposes. This includes free textbooks created by faculty from around the world and shared through a Creative Commons copyright, which allows for free access and distribution, as well as allowing the faculty to customize the text to fit the needs of their courses, and all of this is for free. And if I haven't mentioned it enough, I'd like to stress this one point. The books are free. That's very important to us. And to briefly illustrate the immediate cost savings a plan like this can achieve, I'll use the example of a Biology 211 course at Winona State. It's an introductory course, and in that it has 24 sections, and all those sections in turn seat 22 students. The average cost of one of the textbooks, and some courses require multiple, is $176.75. To save you the math, the total cost of textbooks for all of the students together taking Bio 211 is a little over $93,000. If only half of the professors teaching those courses adopted open source textbooks, open source materials, which again are free, the total student savings would be over $46,000. With such drastic results in just one course, you can see why we're excited about the possibilities. Currently, we're working with Senator Eakin. We also have spoken with other members of the committee about this issue. And we are having a bill drafted that hopefully later we'll be able to bring before you and have some nice discussions about.
Thank you. Good. We like that. Sounds like a great plan. Thanks for sharing it with us. Yeah. Senator Eakin, any comments?
It's a great bill. I'm looking forward to presenting it here. And thank you for your testimony here today. So, yeah, thanks.
Members, any other questions? Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you to all the testifiers so far, and I know we have more coming, I just want to draw attention to the great students we have here representing Winona, both Southeast Tech with Jenna and Winona State with Alex and Tom, and thanks for making the trip up. And we're hearing a common theme, and that's tuition, which equals student loans, and we are going to do everything we can, I think, as a committee to try to address that. It's an uphill battle, and it's a long-term battle. But in the short term, there are some things that I think we can do to be helpful as a committee. Madam Chair, you mentioned the state grant program and maybe making some tweaks, especially for part-time students and students with dependents, and then also the open-source textbooks. And I'm excited to take a look at that bill, and I talked to some University of Minnesota students earlier today about that, and I think this is a great cost savings mechanism that we can do here at the legislature this year that will make an impact long term for our students. So I'm excited to work on those as a committee.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Madam All right. Chair.
Yo, yes.
Potentially,
Senator Fischbach.
We could look at legislation that would limit what college landlords could charge.
I like that, Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach, I'm probably the best landlord in town, right, Alex?
I just want to state for the record that he has been a great landlord. Very reasonable.
Please let the record reflect that.
Madam Chair, I was just making suggestions.
Yeah. Very
if
good.
Senator Miller doesn't want to co-author the bill with me, I'll understand.
I'd be happy to co-author Senator Fischbach.
All right, next we're going to hear from, let's see, so this will be the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. Matt, Jackson, and Elizabeth.
Yeah, we need to make one correction on one of the names. The second Matt is actually Nate.
Well, that makes it so much easier.
We'll fix that for the record when it's, when he it's his turn here, so plug this thing in.
And Matt, congratulations for your successful event today.
Thank you so much for speaking on it, Senator Bonoff. Yes.
You know, because of our QR code, your documents are on our scribed. Oh. So if you have a scribed page, if you have any trouble.
Well, it looks like we found it here. I appreciate the patience of the committee.
Please.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Bonoff and members of the committee. I just want to start by saying, as many of you know, it's our annual U of M Student Lobby Day and our rally day here today called Support the U Day. It's been a great success, and I certainly hope that all of you have seen us here today. And I know that a number of you have had a chance to either meet with University of Minnesota students or probably see them walking around with different types of paraphernalia and T-shirts and stuff. And I want to especially thank Senator Bonoff for speaking at a rally today, and we really appreciate your leadership and the comments you provided today. So
thank you. And will you say your name for the record?
Oh, sure, of course. So my name is Matt Forsty. I'm an undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota. I'm a junior. I study mathematics and finance. I'm a dual degree student, and I'm originally from Rochester, Minnesota. In addition to my studies, I am the chairman of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. So we're the relatively new organization, and our structure represents the nearly 70,000 students in the University of Minnesota system. And I want to take the time to recognize the almost two dozen University of Minnesota students from multiple campuses in our system that that are in the audience today. And I think their presence reflects how we feel about this legislative session and I think the importance that we place on it. So just want to recognize that that student involvement, is I'm really proud of it. So kind of moving on, I've been asked today to provide a little bit of information about our structure and our platform and what we think, and I'm joined here by three really excellent, outstanding students who, at the end of the presentation, will tell some really great stories about who they are and what they're facing. So moving on. I just want to start with the mission of our organization. It's to accurately and fairly reflect the voices of the students of the University of Minnesota in government. And I think it's an important statement. It's broad, but it says exactly what we are and what we do. And I want to place a special emphasis on the words accurately and fairly. And I'll get into those in just a moment. So here's a graphic, a little visual of our structure. It looks like communications got lopped off. But basically, a few years ago, what we saw and what existed in terms of legislative advocacy and student involvement in the legislative process at the University of Minnesota was extremely weak. We had a lack of student involvement and a lack of structure that facilitated that for students that naturally would want to tell a story or want to be involved in that process. So about 2 years ago, conversations and planning started to arise to address this issue. And a little more than a calendar year ago, almost a year and a half now, we officially established this structure, the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, as part of our student government structure at the university to represent students in government. And I'm really proud to say that I think it's been an excellent success so far. And I think that we have really become an institutional part of the student government process. And I think the fact that we're here today, the fact that we had an extremely successful rally day today to illustrates kind of the success that we've had in the first year and a half or so. But I want to be careful to also say that we're looking to grow. And we think there are so many opportunities for building student involvement and for training students and for giving students avenues to getting involved in the legislative process across our five campuses. So I'll get a little bit more into the structure that's presented in this visual here. So at the bottom you see these acronyms are the six student associations at the University of Minnesota. Obviously, we have five campuses, and we have five undergraduate student associations. Those are MSA, UMDSA, RSA, MCSA, and CSA for the five campuses. GAPSA is the student association that represents all the graduate and professional students across the system. And as I understand it, you'll also be hearing presentations from both MSA and GAPSA later in this committee hearing, and really, really happy to hear that. So how our structure works is that two representatives from each of those student associations serve on our central committee, which is our primary governing body and makes decisions in terms of the legislative advocacy in our platform and conducts basically the business of legislative advocacy for students and plans things like Today Support the U Day. So when I said on the last slide, a part of our mission statement, fairly representing, I think that's just important to note that part of what makes this happen is that all of our campuses are represented equally, and that allows us to have a structure that it's better for all of us that we're a part of this, and that the fact that our efforts are collaborative now and that we have consistent communication and structure is excellent for us, whereas that didn't exist before. So I'm proud of that. Back to the graphic, our central committee, obviously you see our back and forth relationships with both the state in terms of advocacy and lobbying, for instance, here at the Capitol. Community and stakeholders are our work with, you know, peer bodies like MSUSA and the other, the MNSCU student associations. And obviously we liaise pretty frequently with the university administration. Moving on. Talks a little bit about the changes, and I've talked about these a little bit. So our structure was officially established a little more than a year ago, and I talked about the reasons for that too, and that's to unite our efforts to facilitate consistent communication and collaboration so that we can do things like this and so that we can have continuity and continued growth. So moving into our platform for this year, obviously, like our peers over at Minsky, our unifying theme, our focus is affordability. And we see that first and foremost in the university's budget request. We support the university's budget request. We think that it's excellent for students. We think that it's essential to maintaining both the operations and the competitiveness of the university. And we're really happy about the prospect for an undergraduate in-state tuition freeze. We think that we need to make a statement about the trend in tuition that we've seen in the past decade and more. And the tuition freeze would be a statement that we're aiming to stop that trend or reverse that trend. So we definitely support that. And we also support the other components of the budget request, the increased investment in Minnesota, kind of Minnesota-centric research, some targeted loan forgiveness for health professionals that serve in underserved areas. And I know that you heard from President Kaler about that on Tuesday. So we're here to say that we definitely support the budget request. I also like to talk a little bit about the open content, open textbook legislation. You heard about that very eloquently from our peers over at MSUSA. So I won't get into the details or what really it is because they kind of told it to you. And I know that that our folks over at GAPSA will probably want to talk about that a little more as well. But we're really excited about that. Free textbooks or extremely cheap textbooks are a way to save students money right away. Most students spend a few hundred dollars at least a semester on textbooks, and if we start saving students $100 here, $200 there, $50 there, that adds up really fast, and it's something that we can do easily and right now with little investment up front. So I'm really excited about it, and I will share a little personal story about textbooks. I'm one of those students that has not bought textbooks because I didn't think it was worth $290. Last semester, for instance, to buy one of my accounting textbooks. This semester, I didn't buy another one of my textbooks, a statistics textbook that costs about $120 or $130. I chose not to buy, and I use those textbooks when they're available. There are one or two copies in the university library, and when those copies are available, I can check it out for 2 hours at a time. So that's a decision that I made because I didn't think that the textbooks chosen for my class were worth the investment. I'll also talk about one of the additional items on our platform, which is a medical amnesty policy. And I know some of you have heard about that probably, but I'll talk about what the policy is for everyone. And it's a problem that we see that not all minors in situations where there's underage drinking and there's a situation where 911 should be called or someone really needs assistance, that doesn't always happen as it should 100% of the time. And we think that there are simple changes in state policy that can be made to get more people help when they need it. So the change that we'd like to see is that we'd like to, for alcohol consumption only, in situations where an individual receives or seeks help for another person, for instance, calls 911, we'd like to see them receive immunity from prosecution for basically just an underage drinking or consumption ticket. We think it's a simple change, but we think it can make a big impact if we say that's how we feel as a state, that we put the health and the safety number one. A number of other states have passed similar legislation, and we will be working to draft and introduce a bill at some point this session. So we're looking forward to that discussion. I just want to talk a little bit about, I'll present these. I don't want to go into these in very much depth because I want to get to our speakers who will kind of share their personal stories that reflect these trends. But this is something this is part of a report that was compiled by our University of Minnesota student representatives to the Board of Regents. And I wanted to bring it to you because I read the report. It was compiled and presented to the board in December. It's really excellent, and I think it makes some great points. And this data that they compiled, I think, is really compelling. This shows the change in tuition rates, basically, in the last 10 years adjusted for inflation. So if you look at the top line, you see Twin Cities resident tuition or Twin Cities for Minnesota resident tuition. The change in the last 10 years is 61 some odd percent adjusted for inflation. So that's a pure increase in cost. And that's the same thing is reflected. The same trend is reflected at our other campuses. So Duluth, Morris, Crookston, you see similar large increases. This is another set of data that was included in that presentation. And this is a change in basically the makeup of the undergraduate student body and where they come from in terms of family income. And you see over the past 10 years, we've seen less come from lower income families and more come from higher income families. And
my goodness, that's a huge jump, 9% to 23%.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
So we think that that's data worth looking at, and I know I've shared the link to this full report as part of the region socket with the committee administrator, and I would hope it's really excellent work by our student representatives to the Board of Regents, so I would encourage you to take a deeper look at that.
And it's linked with your QR code, members. And for anybody who hadn't done that before, which I hadn't, you have to download an app. Dave can help. So.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fishbach.
There's also just a simple web address that you type in because you don't know what QR codes are.
Gotcha. <So. laughs> Nice. Oh, and you got it.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Great. Very good. Thank you.
We definitely appreciate the use of technology. So moving on, I'll talk a little bit about debt because that's kind of what comes next when we talk about tuition and affordability, because debt is what students leave with and what I think a lot of students don't picture themselves when they go into college paying back their debt for 5, 10, 15 years later. It's not something that naturally goes through your head, but it's something that certainly affects your life after you leave. So, obviously, we know that Minnesota is a high debt state. We have a high percentage of students with debt, and the debt that they carry on average is high when you compare it to the nation. And just on the Twin Cities campus specific data, it's similar. It lines up with that statewide data that we have high debt and we have a lot of students with debt, and the same kind of trends are reflected on our coordinate campuses. But with that, I'd like to turn it over to our speakers who will provide some testimonials. So we'll start with Nate Schwab, not Matt Schwab. Sorry about that, Nate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nate.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Nate Schwab, and I am a junior at the University of Minnesota. I am currently studying political science and business management, and I serve as the ranking representative to the Student Senate Consultative Committee on the Student Senate and the Minnesota Student Association at the U. I thank you all for the privilege of allowing me to speak today. I am a junior, but I say junior with an asterisk, because although I am in my third year of studies at the university, I only have a sophomore's worth of credits to my name. My parents help me out with tuition, but it is not enough. Financial aid is limited, and I am determined to ensure that I don't cripple myself with astronomical debt when I graduate. At the end of my freshman year, I took a job in the service industry working 40 hours a week. I continue to work 40 hours a week to this day. As a matter of fact, as soon as I leave here, I'll be going to my job. Working full-time was not enough initially. I took a leave of absence from the university in the fall of 2012 in order to be able to afford living expenses and rising tuition costs like you just saw. When I returned to the U the following semester, the full class load and full-time job forced me to choose between grades and my job, and as losing my job was not an option, as I was supporting myself, my grades did suffer. It is because of this that I will be at the end of my third year at the university only 45% complete with my bachelor's degree. It is because of this that I will have racked up nearly $14,000 in student loan debt, even with a well-paying job, driving potential debt down. Education cannot be a privilege of the rich. Education needs to be accessible for all. It is absolutely vital in order for society to grow and prosper. I respectfully ask that this committee, and by extension the Minnesota legislature, prioritize accessible, affordable higher education for my future, the future of all the students in this room, and the future of the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I commend you for having the strength and the fortitude to take on a full-time job and keep up with your commitment to school. And we just strongly encourage you, as hard as it is, to stay in school. And I know you know that, or you wouldn't be speaking here.
Yes,
and so we're going to do our part and do everything we can to try and find a way to limit debt and tuition. So
thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Klassen.
Could I ask, what would be affordable for you?
You know, at this point, I couldn't really give you a number specifically, but I will tell you that at the rate that I'm on, it's looking like I'll be upwards of $25,000 to $30,000 before I graduate from the University of Minnesota. And to me, as I'm looking forwards into the future, that is not a good way to start off your career. Something around 5,000 would probably be, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 would be more manageable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jackson Fate, and I'm a freshman studying political science in the University Honors Program at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities campus. I grew up in Dodge Center, Minnesota, which is a tiny town in District 25A, about a half hour west of Rochester. When I was applying to colleges last year, cost was at the forefront of my mind. I was a high-achieving high school student from a really low-income family. Because of that, every single time I applied to a college, I knew in the back of my mind that it would be incredibly difficult to pay, no matter where else accepted. I knew I wanted to go to a large university with a strong academic record, especially in political science. The University of Minnesota Twin Cities fit these credentials perfectly, but at a total cost of about $23,000 a year, I was terrified about the amount of debt I would be shouldering. Thankfully, however, because of the generosity of the families that fund private scholarships, because of state and federal funding, I'm able to attend the University of Minnesota. I received both a federal and a state grant to attend the University of Minnesota, as well as a scholarship directly from the university, the U Promise Scholarship, which is based solely on need. I plan to go on to further schooling after my undergrad, likely law school, because that's just the sort of thing that interests me at this point. And that would be no small investment. Law school receives a lot less aid than the undergrad education load, and that would be another huge load of debt onto my shoulders. If I wasn't able to receive the funding that I do receive from the university and from the state and federal funding, I would not have the opportunity to speak before you today. I wouldn't have the opportunity to speak for other low-income students from rural Minnesota. So thank you for the opportunity. I hope you'll keep funding the University of Minnesota.
Congratulations for your hard work. And just a quick question for you, Nate. Do you access the state grant program?
No, I do not.
Have you tried to do that?
I am actually not quite familiar with the entire state grant program at this point.
Okay, very good. So that's another thing that we want to understand, committee members, is what kind of counseling and coaching do our potential students get so that they're made aware of all the options and availability?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
I believe if they fill out the FAFSA and that goes to the financial aid office, that if you were qualified for that, it would end up showing up. I don't think you have a separate issue of applying for it. So if you fill out a FAFSA, everybody's nodding. Okay. You all filled out your own FAFSAs. Your mom didn't do it?
No.
Okay. Because my kid's mom does it. No. But so that would be the case, though, Madam Chair, that, you know, they just, if they qualify for it, it would show up on their FAFSA.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairwoman, committee members. My name is Elizabeth Hipsch. I am originally from the small town of Perham, Minnesota, up kind of near Detroit Lakes. And before I get into my testimony, I just want to say that the last time I was in a committee hearing, it was in Washington, D.C., and Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google and now chairman of Google, was testifying. And I have to say that it's better to be in Minnesota.
But that's quite impressive.
It's really, really great to be here representing the U and talking about the cost of tuition and the really, really high cost of education that students across the state and across the nation are facing every day. When I was a senior in high school and I was making my collegiate decisions, I chose the University of Minnesota for two reasons. One was the opportunity that I knew I would get coming here, being a student from Minnesota, and looking at all of the connections that the University of Minnesota has within the state of Minnesota. And the other one was cost. I am from a farm family in northern Minnesota. My parents are small business owners, and I did not qualify for a single cent of federal, state, or any type of of financial aid. And so for me, it came down to merit scholarships. And the I got the most scholarship money merit-wise from the University of Minnesota, and so that's where I ultimately chose to go. And it was the best decision I ever made. Throughout my 4 years at the U, I'm a senior now, majoring in finance. I've had 6 internships in 6 completely different industries. I've had the opportunity to work for the Senate in Washington, D.C. and do microlending initiatives in Kenya. And most recently, I worked doing strategy for General Mills. And it's because of the University of Minnesota and my education that I was able to do these things. I had the opportunity when I was a sophomore to start a company that Inc. magazine later named one of its coolest college startups for the year 2011. And I have a full-time job after graduation. And I feel like with our students, I'm not an exception. We have phenomenal students with a lot of opportunity, but the cost of education at the University of Minnesota is crippling. Today we've heard a lot about debt, but we haven't talked at all about the cost of an education. Well, I just got done paying my last tuition bill to the University of Minnesota, and I added up my total cost of my education over 4 years, and without including the cost of housing for my junior or senior year, the University of Minnesota charged me over $102,000. I'm a Minnesota resident, and I was born and raised here. My sister attends the University of Minnesota as well, and she's facing a similar scenario. And so as my reason for coming to the Capitol today was to really support the U in terms of a tuition freeze. My brother is coming to the Carlson School in the fall, and as I look at how much the cost of my education increased over 4 years, it was probably $20,000 in the terms of what I expected to pay when I was a freshman at the U, in terms of what I actually paid now as a senior. And so I look at the future of our education and wonder what opportunities will these students have? Will they have the same opportunities that I had if they're faced with this crippling debt? And so I think that that's definitely food for thought. Thank you.
That really puts it in perspective. Thank you very much. And before you leave, I just want to acknowledge a couple things. Our legislative assistant to the committee, my assistant, Sean Oyes, just graduated from the University of Minnesota. So, and he interned when he was at the university. And then my other intern is a member of your group, too, from last year, Sophie. So we really appreciate when you come to the Capitol, whether it's coming to intern, to work, or to testify, and you clearly are very impressive.
Thank you.
Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question, and you talked about the tuition freeze, and that's what everybody seems to focus on, but there's also other costs, and I'm glad that, you know, we're addressing some of the other costs, including the textbook costs. What about the fee costs? And sometimes I'm concerned about, you know, if you put a freeze in one area on costs, they'll just show up in another area. And fee increases, have they been an issue for you? Have they, you know, been more burdensome than they have been in the past?
Yeah, I can say I'm a Carlson School student, and our fees are higher than any other college on campus, and they have gone up every year.
Good question. Anyone else? Okay, thanks very much. Next, we have the Minnesota Student Association.
Senator Bonoff, may I ask
Senator
the young
Sharon.
Woman who testified a question?
Yes, that's Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, I'm sorry, I'm a little slow on the draw here. I would like to ask you one question before you leave.
Sure. And I want to know what your job's going to be, too, yeah. So, but go ahead.
I thought I heard you say something. I just want to clarify that you've added up the cost of your education in a over four years. Is that
yes.
What you're saying?
Yes.
And it was around $100,000.
Yep, it was just over $102,000, and that's the amount of money that was billed to my student account at the University of Minnesota. So I lived off campus my junior and senior year, and so that cost of off-campus housing and food is not included in the total $102,000.
So are you able to determine if you took your housing out of there, what the cost of it would have been?
With my housing out of it, the cost would have been right around $84,000 or
$85,000. And did I also hear you say that you anticipated that the cost would be $40,000?
I anticipated that the cost would be $80,000.
Anticipated that, okay.
Yes.
And what I'm listening for here is what we're talking about in earlier meetings about the tuition being $13,000. It just doesn't, at the university, doesn't add up. At least I know I'm not a mathematics major, but that number over 4 years doesn't add up with the number that you're.
It comes in the form of fees. Or when I studied abroad in Kenya, which is arguably the cheapest place you can go, but it's still more expensive than a regular semester of tuition.
appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, do you want to share with the committee your job?
I'm going to work for General Mills to do strategy.
Congratulations. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Elizabeth, just one more quick question. When you factored in, you mentioned that you were looking at your University of Minnesota account.
Yes.
Did you also put books on that account as well? So would that be a part of what you're talking about as well?
Yeah. Some semesters I bought books on Amazon. More recently, I started putting books on my student account because I did get a couple of scholarships when I was for my senior year to cover books. But my textbooks are this semester or this year, the cost of my textbooks was $1,800.
So what you're talking about is everything you paid to the U, housing.
Housing tuition, for my freshman and sophomore year. And then, tuition and books. Right.
Well, thank we're you. Glad you're still here because now we have another question.
Senator Pierce. Not letting you go that easy. Just one more really important question. If you could be any animal, which animal would you be? and why?
I actually have a really good answer to this question. I would be a lowl, which is a combination of a lion and an owl, because I work at a leadership camp in the summer, and we have a personality assessment. And every time I've taken this test, which is like 12 or 13 times, I always get split between a lion and an owl. Lion and an owl combination, and so I guess I would be a flying lion.
Senator Peterson, how did you know she would know that answer?
I just said me too.
Madam Chair, I'm concerned that it has to be like a real animal. Is that the question? No.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Senator Sheeran.
Perhaps it has to be a real animal, but with the representation on the kind of research that the university is doing, there may actually at some point be a mix here of a lion and an owl.
Exactly. If we can have a labradoodle, we can have a flying owl.
Okay. So next we have with us Taylor Williams and Domingo Ramirez.
Excellent. Madam Chairwoman, I'm Taylor Williams. I'm the student body president at the Minnesota Student Association. I'm joined by Domingo, one of our freshman interns, and all of one of our freshman interns, and I apologize that she did not make it onto the agenda.
Ooh. We welcome you here, all.
Thank you.
Well, let's give her an animal name.
This is a great delight. So I'll just give you a brief introduction as to what we're going to do as I look for our PowerPoint. I will briefly go over what our organization does and then get into the most important part of this presentation, which is the testimonials. As a senior, I'd like to talk about my feelings as I enter the workforce, but more importantly, I think the two freshmen we have here with us can talk about the raw uncertainty that they face, as they begin their journey, not knowing how much they'll have to pay in tuition next year or what their debt payments will be when they graduate. Did they put in the hearing folder? I think so. Excellent. Thank you for your patience. All right, so we'll go over, like I said, what do we do? Some student challenges that are related to costs, but also what are other things that students are facing on campus now, and then go into the testimonials. So the Minnesota Student Association is the undergraduate student government at the University of Minnesota. As a collective voice of the student body, we strive to improve the experience of all students on campus. So as you can tell, that covers a very wide array of things. So besides advocating for students, we provide money for student groups in the form of grants. So over $60,000 are awarded each year to about 800 student groups on campus. And that goes to groups like the African Student Association, all the way to the Unicycle Club. So creating a real sense of culture and community on campus is very important to us. We have culture and community events, including the World Fair, which showcases diversity on campus, Voterpalooza, which was an event to register students and promote civic engagement. One of your colleagues, Senator Dziedzic, joined me on the moon bounce that we had on Northrop Mall, and that was enjoyable. And then the leadership reception, which is Saturday evening, which will bring private leaders like the CEO of Best Buy together with the Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, and university administrators to help show students how leaders develop over time. We also offer a wide array of programs and services. We have the Volunteer Tax Assistance Program, which does taxes for students and low-income community members for free. This year, they'll prepare about 900 taxes, and we're transitioning into a program where they'll also prepare FAFSA applications for students. I can tell you, coming from a family which had never faced the FAFSA before, it was a very, very tedious process. We also host TEDxUMN on campus. So if you're familiar with the TED Talks, inspiring talks about technology, entertainment, and design. And I didn't include this on this PowerPoint, but Senator Miller might be interested in knowing we do a renter survey to help identify good and bad landlords. So maybe we can franchise that to Winona. I'm not sure if it's necessary, but I've only heard good things. So what are some current challenges we face on campus that are not necessarily related to cost, but I think are important to still share? Right now, the student government, along with the graduate and professional student government, is advocating for a tobacco-free campus. Already 49 colleges and universities in Minnesota are smoke-free or tobacco-free. So we feel the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus is far behind the curve on this. College-age students are the most targeted by tobacco companies, and research shows that when university students are asked, where do you receive the most exposure to secondhand smoke, the place they answer is University of Minnesota. So if you think about it, when university students are thinking about the campus, they shouldn't be thinking about secondhand smoke. And when we talk about operational excellence, which the university's administration will mention to you many times through the budget request process, note that potential health plan savings from this plan, as estimated by the American Lung Association, could total $4 to $8 million. I'd love to see those savings used to reduce overall costs and potentially tuition. Next, as you heard earlier from my colleague Matt, medical amnesty is very important to us as well. Underage and binge drinking is a major challenge at the university, and I know many universities and high school areas in the state of Minnesota. Almost 40% of 20-year-olds report that they've engaged in high-risk drinking in the past 14 days. Current state law discourages students from seeking help in medical emergencies when they need it, and I know many, many, many anecdotal examples where a law like this would have allowed students to seek help when it was appropriate. This won't solve the underage drinking problem, and data from 10 other states that have implemented it show it will not increase underage drinking, but we believe that we've identified a barrier that can easily be changed in state law to allow students to receive help when it's necessary. Next, there's a confusing financial aid process that we face as students, and I'll get into this a little bit more in my testimonial, but there are discrepancies in the definition of a full-time student at the different levels of funding or aid. So according to the federal government, a full-time student has to be taking 12 credits. According to the university, it's 13. According to the state of Minnesota, there's a sliding scale between 3 and 15 credits where the amount of money that they award a student is different for each credit that they take. To give you an example, I'm taking 14 credits right now. I was previously taking 15. I decided to drop a class related to physical activity because I thought it wasn't really necessary. $336 were billed to my account this morning because the state grant that was taken away from me for that one credit. So imagine how this incentivizes students to take classes they don't need and to incur costs at the university level that probably are unnecessary. So I encourage you to look into this process and maybe work with the university to just set a single credit number for full-time students that won't change on a sliding scale. All right, now the most important part, testimonials. I'll just go first here. Again, my name is Taylor Williams. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm a senior in the Carlson School of Management studying entrepreneurial management. Which was not my first degree choice. Finance was, but I learned that I could graduate in 3 years if I went for the management degree. And as a potential cost-saving measure, I chose that. I come from a low-income family that makes less than $40,000 a year, a working-class family. My mother does antiques. My father's a chiropractor. Just to take you through the process, one of the reasons I'm able to graduate in 3 years is because AP credits that I earned in high school. The state subsidized the AP tests that I took, allowing me to take, I think, between 7 and 9 at a low cost, where I wouldn't have been able to afford that without the state subsidy. As we applied for school, we chose the University of Minnesota because we knew that the generous level of scholarships from the university and state aid would allow it to be affordable for my family. And when I say that, I don't want to imply that my family is able to contribute anything. It's all me, and all the debt will be on my back when I graduate. There's a lot of confusion when you apply to school around grants, scholarships, and loans. When you are accepted into university, you receive an aid package, which is different at every different school. Schools vary their acronyms for different grants and loans. There's a Ford Federal Loan, there's a Stafford Direct Loan, et cetera, et cetera. And different acronyms are used. One of the things that I think this committee might be interested in looking into is how do we normalize that process throughout state-funded universities and colleges so families can lay all that information on one table without having to call the financial aid office over and over again and make the best decision for them, make the best investment choice at that period in time. As a student, in addition to increased academic loads allowing me to graduate early, I have consistently worked 30 to 40 hours a week during the school year to help cover tuition fees and living expenses. I have worked around the university from being an intern at the university's Office for Technology Commercialization, which takes state and federally funded research and tries to create startup companies based off of it, creating jobs and making our economy competitive, to a telemarketer soliciting alumni for tuition subsidizing donations. I would like to note for the record that the former was a much more enjoyable internship. At the Carlson School of Management, you are required to study abroad to graduate. So just last month, I went to Costa Rica on a two-week required study abroad trip that added $5,000 to my debt load. If I was not required to study abroad, I'll tell you that I would not have to save money. I would have traveled later in life. But that was the most inexpensive option offered over the 3 years that I've been here because I've been keeping track. And I pulled the trigger on that one when I was able to. I'll graduate $15,000 in debt, even though I've done seemingly everything possible to keep my debt level low. I don't look forward to paying it off, but I'm sure I'll be able to over time, but it will create many challenges when I'm going out into the workforce. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you know what you're going to do, Taylor?
Yes. Like so many of us today, I'm one of the lucky ones. I've been given a job offer at Deloitte Consulting here in Minneapolis, so I'll stay in Minnesota. But let me tell you, the people who aren't here today, many, many students are not that lucky, and many of my friends will be staying at my place for many weeks as they go through the job searching process.
Well, congratulations. Outstanding, outstanding work, and thanks for sharing your story. Yeah. Okay. Domingo.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Domingo Ramirez, and I'm a freshman at the Carlson School of Management. I am proud to say that I'm a Golden Gopher at heart, and that if it wasn't for the fantastic aid that I get from the University of Minnesota and the state, I would not be here today. I am originally from Mexico, and my family arrived here 8 years ago. We were looking for a better life, and thankfully we found our life here in Minnesota. The University of Minnesota has given me the opportunity to pursue my goals and dreams. The journey to get here was really hard. I had to sacrifice a lot of my free time and my social life because I actually get a lot of merit scholarships, and those take countless nights of work to write and to go over. I have worked diligently ever since my freshman year because it was my dream to come to the U of M, and I made it here. I hope to stay here these 4 years because I want to make my family proud. I'm actually the first person in my family to go to college, and they're really proud of me, and they're lending me their moral support, and they're trying to get me through college. I hope to graduate. I really do. That's pretty much my number one goal right now, and I feel like debt could really cripple that goal and the chance to actually go with that. I know that even though I have the opportunity to do that, a lot of my friends from high school didn't. They are not going to college. They're going off at high school and taking jobs in the workforce. And I know that some of them are really smart people that could have gone to college, but just the crippling amount of debt and the tuition is just too high for them to handle. I believe, though, that with the state's help, a lot of underrepresented groups like myself could really come to college because I believe that diversity should be a priority for the University of Minnesota and that our point of view could really be valued. Thank you.
Very good. Congratulations. Now, do you have any kind of a mentor relationship?
The University of Minnesota, I'm in the PDFMP program, which is a presidential scholarship, and they pair you up with someone who is in your field. I'm majoring in finance and psychology, and they paired me up with a mentor in the Carlson School of Management.
So if you do come across obstacles and it seems like that's going to stop you, you better use that mentor.
Yes, I definitely
okay.
will.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Olive, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Olive Martin. I'm a freshman in CFANS, and I'm majoring in applied economics, trade and development. And so I'm just going to jump right into my story. After 15 years of marriage, my mom was left with 7 children. However, somehow on a third grade teacher's salary, she was able to raise all of us. Education was always really important to her, but growing up, I was scared to want a higher level of schooling. My older siblings had some higher education, but all had difficulty managing their finances and school at the same time. All but one had to drop out at some point. This fear made me think that I had to join the workforce instead of going off to college, but my family convinced me otherwise. Before arriving in the Twin Cities, I worked multiple jobs throughout high school, but it was not enough. only through the U-Promise scholarship and the state grant and federal aid that I received was I able to enroll as a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I took the risk, and I began my educational career at the U this last fall. Simply, if it had not been for the state funding I had received, I would not have had the opportunity to testify in front of these honorable senators today. And if the funding that I receive ceases to exist, I will have to drop out. I know that if it continues, if it continues to exist, I know my mom will be at graduation crying because she's sappy like that, and apparently it's genetic.
I think it's catching, too. I think some of us are catching it.
So, anyways, thank you for allowing me the chance to attend the University of Minnesota, and please give me the opportunity to make my mom proud.
Yeah, well, we're very proud of you. Thank you. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share in that pride. So it takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength. So any questions for members of the committee? No, see, we're wiping our eyes. Thank you very much. Okay, so now we have our final group, the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly. Brittany Edwards, Alfonso, I'm not going to try it, and Kevin Lang.
How do you say it?
Santiago.
Santiago, thank you. And Brittany, whom I know, so welcome.
Chair Bonoff, members of the committee, my name is Brittany Edwards. I'm a student at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, and I'm president of the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly at the University of Minnesota.
My name is Alfonso Sinjago. I am the Executive Vice President of GAPSA. I'm also a PhD student within Competitive International Development Education. And my wife is a law student at the University of Minnesota, too. And we're both foreign. She's from England. I'm from Venezuela. And we both hope, however, to stay in America and contribute to the economy.
In Minnesota, we hope.
In Minnesota.
My name is Kevin Lang. I'm originally from southern Minnesota. I did my undergraduate at the University of Minnesota. I am currently a PhD student in the College of Veterinary Medicine. I also serve on the executive board as a vice president for GAPSA, and I serve on the Board of Regents as a graduate student representative.
We just want to start by introducing what GAPSA is, and actually there are a few folks in the room, like Charlie Bruce at the Senate Research Table, and Abdul Amari, who is running for student regent, who have been part of our organization. We represent 25,000 graduate professional students at both the Twin Cities campus and Duluth. So we are the umbrella organization of 10 different councils. So the law school, the Carlson Business School, the College of Education, and then all the graduate students at the university, as well as all the medical-related councils. So that's our umbrella, if you want to keep going. We do a lot of the services that MSA described in terms of offering grant programs, doing training for advocacy, and we're overseen by the Office of Student Affairs, but we're also an independent nonprofit organization funded by student fees. We keep going. Yeah. Let's see. We did a student body survey in the fall. And this is a word cloud of the different qualitative data that we collected. You can see some of the themes that popped up. You know, there was a concern from some of you about the unionization effort that happened last year with the graduate student workers. And I think that on here some of those words reflect the concerns that those students had about advisor-advisee relationships and their workload and their assistantships, because that's one of the main sources of funding for our students is through those types of jobs. So, right now what we're doing is in our interviews with our focus groups, interviews, and our survey, we learned that what people wanted, what these student leaders wanted, was leadership development. And, you know, a lot of them got involved with their councils, or they got involved with GAPSA because they wanted to learn how to be both students, academics, and leaders at the same time. they weren't necessarily getting the leadership development through that process. So we partner with the Center for Integrative Leadership that is a cross-sector collaboration of several of the graduate and professional programs to teach those skills. And, you know, Kevin, do you want to talk about why you got involved?
Yeah, so this is exactly why I got involved with GAPSA and the Board of Regents, which is this idea of integrative leadership. I'm a molecular biologist. I work in a laboratory bench research setting, and many of the things that I do on a daily basis mean absolutely nothing in terms of the grand scheme of things. But many of the problems that I work on, such as food safety in agriculture and things like that, are these huge problems, which the solutions to those problems are going to take people from the College of Education and people from the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs and people like me on the science side to collaborate together, work together on these problems, and create solutions. And so this sort of leadership training is exactly why I joined GAPSA, to learn how to bring together these ideas and come together and solve problems.
Yeah, and adding to that, I'm currently one of the parts that we noticed that there was this great possibility or great chance to partner with CIL. Was I was part of their leadership team, which has members from the whole campus, and people apply and obtain these leadership skills. But it didn't have an application component directly created into the program. And what we're trying to do right now with GAPSA and CIL is having that really overlap of goals in addressing those cross-challenge problems that are larger than a particular department. And this is what the program tries to do. And it was started by the previous president of the University of Minnesota. He helped fund this program, Dr. Brunix, and it does address those problems in a intercultural effectiveness and trying to bring out an impact through them.
Because within the University of Minnesota, it's very siloed. People are there for their specific field of study. And our organization has a unique role in being able to talk across those boundaries and to share different approaches to our social problems that are happening now and are emerging for the future. So we're also thinking about how we're a land-grant institution that's relevant within the 21st century, how we prepare our students to lead and to solve the complex issues that we're facing.
And that's why there's that emphasis, like the center emphasizes and gaps us now in its culture, and that's part of our resolutions and our evaluation, is that leadership concept over being leaders, that everybody has the possibility to improve in their leadership skills and through it make an impact.
So through this partnership with CIL, we are developing infrastructure to teach our leaders these different skills. And we want to put them into practice within our organization using some new techniques, such as the ones that are listed here. And we already started to implement these this year using a World Cafe in place of what was traditionally town hall meeting with the president of the university. So what a World Cafe is it takes a traditional town hall meeting and you take two questions, and instead of having the president of the university in front of you with a huge congregation of graduate students, we split up the graduate students into smaller groups and we tackle these two questions and within the groups. And then members of the group swap. So within every group, every person in the room hears all of these different points of view. And so what you do is you are taken from the traditional town hall meeting where you have the people who are for the issue and you have the people who are against the issue, and those are the only people that you hear. You only hear the people that came there to talk, and they were going to come there to talk yesterday and they're going to go talk tomorrow. So what World Cafe does is it removes that situation and we hear more of the people in the middle. And we don't just hear, you know, these created speeches of their prepared answers. We hear the stories of why they think the answer should be that way. And you get a lot of the personal touches come out in that way. And we had a great success with that this year at our town hall meeting with the president.
But these aren't approaches to problems that are necessarily intuitive for people within different disciplines, that they have these skills or approaches. I mean, we know that you all have town hall meetings with your constituents, and probably it would be helpful, more helpful for you to hear from everybody rather than just the either supporters who show up or the detractors that show up with a very like pet issue. How can you get the input of everybody that you're representing in an efficient and thoughtful way? So that's our goal. And we're trying to model as a student governance what we want our, you know, bigger governance to look like and to be able to solve problems. So
yeah, I mean, and many issues that it addresses. Like they had a recent grand challenge discussion around animal rights and worker rights. And just they try to bring complex issues into, well, it's more of you don't just catch a ball in baseball and solve, you get an out, but you're trying to juggle a complicated problem. And when you're juggling three balls, so you stop managing the problem, the balls fall down. So it's about looking at certain issues that are not really problems that I can catch a ball and they're done, but they're very complex because they're moving pieces on both sides. And if we don't look at it in a complex manner, then we might miss some elements and have a resolution that's actually maybe not as positive, have some detrimental consequences. So when they try to bring everybody to the board with different perspectives, that's what they're trying to aim for. And they're also in the idea generation trying to bring about actionable items or solutions, policies or programs that can impact that ways, points in which there's some commonalities and they can agree forward.
Well, and so to bring this to the discussion today, we very much support the testimonies of the undergraduate students that you heard from earlier, because they're the future potential students within our constituency. We want them to be able to afford to go to graduate and professional school and to, you know, provide the 21st century workforce that we need. And we want them to do that affordably. And so for us, that's a grand challenge. How do you guys actually solve that? Because let's say you do a tuition freeze, and we definitely support that. We support the university budget proposal. But you know, some of you guys that we've seen today have said, well, okay, so we can do a tuition freeze, and then some other fee is going to go up, or some other cost is going to go up, and it's not really going to change anything for you. We want to think about how to solve these grand challenges and how to prepare our public universities to address these issues.
So we want you to solve these grand challenges.
Keeping with the grand challenge idea of affordability, you know, like Brittany was saying, I'm sure you would all love to provide funding for not only the University of Minnesota, but the Minsky system and all of these different state colleges and so that they can afford to freeze tuition or lower tuition. But let's just be honest, that's not economically feasible over the long term. It's not a sustainable answer. So we need to think outside of the box. And so GAPSA is uniquely positioned to push for some of these new emerging technologies like open textbooks, open coursework, where we are cutting costs in other ways. We are shifting costs so that you know, maybe tuition is going to keep rising, but we can reduce costs in other ways.
Just to add to that, you can go on to the next thing, but so one of the costs that we didn't, that wasn't discussed in the terms of open textbooks is open journals. Journals are one of the highest operational ongoing costs that, let's say, the library system incurs. And even universities such as Stanford, MIT, and Harvard are struggling to afford a wide range of journals needed to conduct research. On top of that, we're paying public dollars for public research that then we're turning around and having to pay exorbitant costs for that are far beyond inflation, like 600% above inflation for textbooks, and the same sort of, you know, ratio for journals. And it's just, it's incredible to me that we pay public dollars for public research and then public dollars to get that research back into the hands of our public thinkers.
So just as a personal story, I have several publications all paid for by either the National Science Foundation or the USDA, all of which are funded by everybody here in this room. And if any of you without a subscription would like to read one of those articles, they cost around $50 a piece just to download and print off. At the University of Minnesota, we obviously have subscriptions to all of those, but the institutional licenses of those can be like, you know, $25,000 or $50,000 a year.
And building on what Brittany said, actually, we don't have subscriptions to a lot of them. We don't, because even Harvard and MIT have to cut down subscriptions. Even universities with $1 billion of endowment cannot sustain some of these rising costs of journals. And the way we see it, and that's why we really felt strongly about it, and we partnered with MSUSA, with MSLC, with MSA as well, is that right now it is an emerging technology. But what happens with technology is that over time they become invisible. Like many of the things we take for granted today, like papers and chairs and other things, they become invisible. And we do feel that openness needs to be pushed further now, and it can create a major impact in reducing cost. And it has already. When we think of openness, it's just the internet itself is an example of openness. Mozilla Firefox, when you think of Apache, and you think of other great innovations, Google functions on their very open system. So openness can help innovation, it can help creativity, and promoting it within the textbook market, it could also promote greater competitiveness. When you have openness, it doesn't mean that it decreases close necessarily, but it just increases competition as well. So you have to explain why you're asking for more money for a particular resource. If you're going to charge me $200 per book, then what is the value added of the book you're producing so that I can really think within my own personal budget that that investment is worthwhile? But when you have an oligopoly and a few really producers that control the market, then the market's out of sync, and it's out of sync with reality of what should be the true cost of production and the true cost for students. And we feel very strongly about moving forward in this issue and forward with legislation and trying to make this change.
So we also want to talk a little bit about the reality of what open access looks like. So, like in California, let's say, you'd be able to also get it on paper because we know there's a digital divide, and that maybe not everybody has access to a tablet or a computer, or they can only go to the lab or whatever. There's a limited number of computers. It also allows you to go to the bookstore and get a printout of the textbook, for example. So we're also trying to include accessibility issues in the bill that's being introduced. And we definitely encourage you to co-author on the bill that MSUSA is helping prepare for us right now.
And we're working closely. I mean, this is from the University of Minnesota Libraries. They are the ones that notice some of these costs sometimes because they're invisible to sometimes academics and students within some of these institutions. But they're not invisible to librarians, and that's why we've been partnering with them also in this change.
So this is just a graph of 600% inflation of textbooks since 1981.
Matt, for example, gave a personal testimony about he decides within his personal accounting that it makes sense to keep buying a textbook. And that, I mean, that can work for some students, but in other cases, you think it works at the beginning of the semester, but then you might notice that it actually doesn't work, and it detrimentally impacts the whole investment. You invest $3,000 in a course, and then you think, well, I'll skip $200 here because those $1,200 that I got to pay for textbooks are too much, and it ends up actually hurting your GPA. It ends up hurting your job outcomes at the end. So, and we're also, within openness, we're thinking of openness as a wider concept. MOOCs can be expensive, so we do think that open textbooks and open access are really easy ways to cut down costs, especially with federal-funded research. But we are thinking of MOOCs also in a sense of how can they be effective, how can they be more helpful for students, how do they really reflect the university of the 21st century, taking into account the boundaries of a Langer institution, where your boundaries are not necessarily to be, you want to be prestigious, but you're also trying to serve every corner of the state. So when we take those two things into account, thinking of TEDx, we also partner with TEDx now, and thinking of the Center for Integrated Leadership, how can we work on those grand challenges to not only try to find a solution within the confines of the University of Minnesota, but also invite people from the wider state and the nation into these conversations, really.
Yeah. And so President Kaler is kind of reluctant to really push forward and adopt this MOOC concept, this massive online open course, because of the economic model that he doesn't think could be sustainable over long periods of time, at least the way it's written right now. And that's where GAPSA can really serve as a leader for this type of technology, because we aren't bound by all of the bureaucracy and held to the same type of accountability as at the institution level. And so we want to provide a space for graduate students to learn these technologies, because even if MOOCs aren't the education center of the future, there are components of them which are very much the here and now, which are video lectures, online forms for classes. These are the things that everybody who takes classes in this room has to deal with. And, you know, I am focused on being future faculty, and I have no idea how to record a lecture. I have no training on how to provide online content for my students. And so GAPSA really wants to serve that aspect for our constituents to provide a training center and to provide expertise of people that know how to do this sort of thing.
And Kevin, how are you going to do that for the undergraduate population? What is your avenue of communication and awareness so that the students understand what you have available to them?
For the graduate and professional students?
No, for the undergraduate. It seemed to me that what you were expressing was also that you wanted to be a resource for the undergraduate body.
Well, primarily it's to teach graduate and professional students how to create MOOCs,
gotcha.
how to know the technology so that they can use it when they go on to teach in community colleges.
But overall, who you're serving is the graduate.
Graduate and professional
gotcha.
Students, yes.
Okay,
however, we partner
you.
With MSA and MSLCN anything that we can.
Gotcha.
So
thank you.
And so not only do we serve the graduate and professional students, but we graduate and professional students serve the state of Minnesota. That's part of our, you know,
service.
Land grant mission is to educate, you know, to educate the public here in Minnesota. And so what we're doing is we're creating MOOCs that will be available to well, it could be available to anybody. That's what a massive online open course is. But focusing on stakeholders within Minnesota to address grand challenges that are common. So CIL has hosted a series of these Finding Common Ground forums on things like human trafficking, agricultural antibiotics, and animal and worker health and well-being. And we want to continue to co-host these and to bring graduate and professional students into them. And the idea would be that we would host MOOCs that citizens from across the state could participate in so they could learn more about the issue. And then stakeholders will be invited in to be part of these discussions, including all of you, to hear more about emerging issues. So as I said, those are some ones that have happened. And we're looking at some of these issues, mental health and gun ownership, for example. Again, a grand challenge, cross-sector issue. So mental health is one part of it. You know, gun ownership or gun rights or gun violence. I mean, there's sort of a spectrum of ways to look at an issue. And so if we bring in stakeholders from, you know, like, for example, with the animal and worker well-being, Alfonso and I, we helped facilitate the conversation that happened in January around that issue. There were folks from OSHA. There were beef producers, pork producers, GNP Golden Plump, students, all together at the table having these conversations and then coming up with idea generation around the issue. So not just this is my opinion, not just the lobbyists that you hear from, let's say, but people who feel personal investment about it, being able to use these technologies, these emerging civic engagement technologies, to really get at what is the heart of it and what are the commonalities that we have. And there might not be a clear solution, but there might be some things that you can start on that address the issue instead of just hearing the extremes of both sides. That doesn't really, I mean, you of anybody, uniting the middle, you know, love to think about this issue of where can we find common ground. And so we're co-hosting these forums to have those discussions.
And, I mean, the other part about it is GAPSA as an organization, one of the parts that we're trying to embed within an organization, and we think it's part that is valuable in any organization, either where it's informal or formal, is to include an evaluation component. There's always room for improvement. So when you constantly evaluate yourself, both through focus groups, surveys, interviews, and other types of observations, you create that culture of we're always looking to get better. And how can we get better? And we think that's a valuable culture within the University of Minnesota. And we're trying to improve, seeing what's emerging with new technologies. 3M, for example, is an example of innovation. We want to be innovative and also be in the cutting edge of some of the new developments that are happening. And looking for those high-impact, low-cost solutions. We think open textbooks can be one of those. High-impact and low-cost. You have different possibilities, and that could be one of them. So, but evaluation of ourselves and our groups is something that we're very focused on.
So, we really appreciate your time, and we're open to any questions that you might have.
Members, questions? Very enlightening conversation. Yes, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am so impressed. This is wonderful. I would like to have an opportunity, not today because we're running out of time, but I do want to hear more about the integrative leadership model because I think it's a great thing. I was teaching at the Humphrey when this model was proposed. And also the four that you didn't go into that we need to hear about in leadership, about the World Cafe. We heard a little bit about it, but art of hosting, the polarity mapping, and the idea generation. I think that those are very important concepts, and I think this is great that you guys are working on this. And, you know, the idea that we need, you know, global citizens and that we're going to be doing the research and work with people not only across disciplines but from all over the world is just here. So thank you for pursuing all of that and doing all of that work. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Any other comments, members? You know, one thing I might throw out is if any of you are interested in internship projects, trying this out in government, I'm sure many members around the table have issues that we're grappling with. And so we'd love to work with graduate students on how we might come up with unique ways to solve challenges. So
we'll actually have an RFP process or, you know, just an email if you send us an email saying issues that you want to explore.
Great.
And we can create the finding ground forum around that and then bring the stakeholders into the University of Minnesota for that conversation.
Okay, members.
Just one question.
Senator Klassen. Sure.
As policymakers here at the table, one or two things that you would ask of us?
To participate, you know, to engage with the university graduate professional students because there's a lot of skill set there. There's a lot of expertise that I think is not being, you know, wielded by all of you, you know, that's just there. And we've been trying to change our advocacy model to reflect that. It's hard because we all have a lot of turnover and limited time and space for that. But I think having you guys continue to reach out and ask us to collaborate with you, if you want to find somebody on a specific issue that you'd like expertise, we'll help identify those people and connect you with them. That's one of our goals. So is that helpful?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, with that, we had a full day. Thank you, students, for being here. Thank you for your participation. You made a difference today. So there being no further business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.